Hi there. Welcome to High Techies Podcast. I'm your host, Pramod Thakal. Live streaming market is expected to reach $247 billion by 2027. With that said, we can say it's a fast-growing industry. How many of you are gamers or you love gaming? How many of you do the live streaming? If you love gaming or are a streamer, then this particular episode might be very interesting for you. Now, on this episode of High Techies Podcast, I'm speaking to Victoria Vucic. Victoria is a co-founder at Instreamly. Instreamly is a platform where brand meets streamers. Victoria, in her career, she has experienced gaming from different angles. She was a streamer and interviewer on esports events and worked on esports organization. As a marketing expert, she worked on 70 plus streamer campaigns for global brands. Now, with Instreamly, she wants to build a better world for streamers and everyone working with them. Welcome, Victoria. So, thanks, Victoria, for joining this particular session. I would like to maybe begin this particular session by asking you how the whole idea about your company started and how were you introduced into this journey?
Okay, so the whole idea started from my co-founder Maciej, because all us four, I'm one of the four co-founders of the company. We've been in gaming, live streaming, esports industry for a while. And Maciej had this idea that it shouldn't be that hard as it is right now to manage streamers, to make sponsorships. And we started working on the idea in 2018. So going in depth of what can be done, how is it done right now, how the whole ecosystem works. So how is it done if you want to, let's say, work with streamers, so people who live stream broadcast, for example, games on portals like Twitch or YouTube. And so instead of having a content like that's already done and published to YouTube, they just stream live what they do, how they play a game, and chat with an interactive chat. People are watching it live, just as a context for people who are not so familiar with live streaming. And we thought that it's so hard for you to execute and measure a sponsorship with a streamer. So with YouTubers, you have YouTubers saying, okay, so this fragment is sponsored by this and this VPN, or there is a logo of a certain brand in the background, all those things. And in live streaming, it was all done so manually. And most of the influencer marketing is done so manually. And we were like, you need to be able to do this automatically because the content is on for 4 hours, 8 hours a day. Because it's live, so it's longer. So it's not like a 10-minute episode and it is viewed 1 million times. And you can be a 30-second segment in that. If the content is long for 6 hours, you want to be visible more. Mm-hmm. And we thought that working with streamers is just hard. And even the basic, like showing logo on a screen needs contacting the streamer, setting up what should be seen in there, how long, how will they get paid, how they will report it. And it's so hard to report a stream of content that's always there. And Maciej came with a simple idea. We can make it automatically. So just show this content in multiple streams at once, measure it, deliver a message on the chat with a link, measure CTRs. And this way, make people actually scale the sponsorships they are making with streamers. And that was the idea in 2018. We made an 80 slides long deck. I was then working with Maciej. I was a junior, you could say, but he brought me onto this project and I was in it from the very beginning. So we made an 80 slide deck. And if you are familiar with making decks, if it's 80 slides, and it's a pitch deck. It's not explaining anything, and it's not so good. But it was our way of approaching it. And then the idea went into the drawer. And there was like no real push from us to really make it happen. And in 2019, Maciej co-founded an esports organization. And Shimon, my co-founder, joined the esports organization. And I was also a part of it. I was working with influencers, streamers, helping them with their social media image, but also like managing some of the sponsorships. And we came to the point when we had like 30 streamers, 30 esports players, and we needed a tool to manage all their live streaming activities. So we do have the MVP that was built by Damian, also my co-founder, who's our CTO. And we took the MVP from the drawer and started testing it on our own streamers. And then we made the first sponsorship campaign for a brand. And we're like, yeah, this benefits streamers. This makes it so easy to make a sponsorship campaign. And brands actually love it because for the first time, they can compare it to any other media they buy. So they can compare it, the CTR, the views, the CPM with anything. So in November, we said, okay, this is something big. We can make this into something big. Let's go into it full time. And we did. So in December 2019, we did the first 10 campaigns on the Polish market, on our national market, let's say. And the brands were happy, streamers were happy. The platform was looking terribly, but it worked, the tool worked. So we started raising money, and this is how it started. So the idea is never like a snap and you know everything and everything works perfect. You just build a product and you're up to earn millions. It's usually a very bumpy story with a lot of downtime for your brain to wire some things up in the background. And in the end, you came out with a clear idea.
So I like the what you just said. It's like you, you know, you kept something on the drawer for quite a while, and then you reignited that idea because you saw that you could perhaps see that particular challenge just to manage the streamers, right? So adverts and so forth. It's an interesting story on its own because you know, once you thought like, you know, it was not going to work, and you said, ah, no, we'll do something else, right? So you got that sort of thing in your mind as well, like no, it's not going to work. But eventually now you are again into that journey and you are working full time, which is great, you know, which is great to hear.
Yeah, even worse, we knew it's going to work. We were pretty much convinced that this is a big thing. Yeah. Nobody has done it before nobody has done it in scale. We have everything we need, like all the competences, all the people who know the perspective of each stakeholder. And for some reason, we just didn't do it. So it's even worse. And it's sometimes you also need to mature up to really have this courage to do something new.
So now, with that said, like, you know, how do you find the gaming industry? You said like you are into the streaming and all that. So how do you find this industry itself? Like, is it different from what I see, you know, when I see people streaming things online and those kind of things? As someone like who is not familiar with that particular territory, maybe can you explain a little bit about the industry itself? What are we talking about? How many people sign up or I don't know, like what is the volume of people like streaming things online, you know? So
gaming as gaming is a $170 billion industry, but also like gaming, it's about game dev development, making games, selling games, and live streaming benefits from it. Like you could say also video on demand or just video on internet benefits from gaming because around 30% of YouTube content is gaming, but you wouldn't call YouTube a gaming company. No. So it's the same in this way. Live streaming, so So just broadcasting content live, it's most popular in gaming. I would say that this is the core, this is how it grew up, how it's been the most popular thing, but it's also switching to more casual things. So the most popular category on Twitch is just chatting. So just talking with people on chat. And as with YouTube, you can go on YouTube and watch people clean a room or make a castle out of sand, and you can watch many, many different things. And it's gonna be the same with live streaming. So people gonna broadcast live all the things they do in life. So right now in the Western world, because China is a whole other market on its own when it comes to live streaming, because it's very big and very different to what we have in here. I would say in Western world, there are over 6 million streamers going live each month. And they usually range with viewership from zero, of course, because there always have to be those people at the bottom, to even people that have 50,000, 100,000 concurrent viewers. And if you compare it to a television, if let's say not the biggest broadcasters, like not the top five channels in your country, but the smaller ones, if they have like 100,000 people watching a show, it's a very big show. So so this industry is a content industry, and the gaming angle is right now the most popular and the one we approach as a company the most, also because we know this approach the most. I was a gaming live streamer. We worked in an esports organization. Shimon worked in a media agency and specialized in gaming, influencer, content, marketing. So all these things come up into this is the starting point, but live streaming is more than this. And also in gaming, The Witcher as a like a game, PC, very important big game, is the start, but how it develops is gonna be Facebook with their VR platform, when you don't know even if it's social media or if it's a game because you play with your friends, but it's gaming. Mobile games that are played by a breastfeeding woman in the middle of the night, it's also gaming. So you could see this as gaming and live streaming as just a part of the culture, a new way to consume content to entertain yourself.
And how challenging is this space? Because there must be a lot of, from what you said, there's a big market, and I'm sure, like, knowing a right sort of influencer within the gaming industry, perhaps it's more important, or to onboard those people on your platform is more important, and then to reaching out to the potential advertiser is another ball game altogether, right? So how do you see this challenge? Like, how do you explain this particular challenge, in your perspective?
I think if, like with every industry that has a very, I would say, close community, or even is a new industry. So in this case, young people are the the majority of people who play games, who are in gaming, who are in live streaming. It means that you have to understand them. Like, you cannot go and bullshit your way into gaming. You cannot go and bullshit your way into live streaming. You have to know what you're talking about. You have to really experience it, and you have to be authentic with it. So that's why when we work with streamers, the people who work with streamers on our side were streamers themselves, or worked with streamers or YouTubers. Mm-hmm. They know it in and out. When it comes to marketers, I think it goes both ways, because on one hand, you have to know how the marketing world works. On the other hand, if you reach out to marketers about gaming, going into live streaming gaming, it's in most cases you have to be the most competent person in this field, because they want your help to go into gaming. Every brand right now is like, okay, we should be in gaming. But there's not much people who know this and also have a lot of work experience. It's fairly a new industry, in a mainstream way, because it's, of course, it started like 50 years ago. But you would say that the mainstream appeal is fairly new. So you have to be prepared to really not screw it up, because if you take somebody into a new field, and it is not only with gaming live streaming, any industry that is new, you cannot say that, you cannot promise golden eggs and then not deliver. Mm-hmm. So if you are the person guiding a brand and somebody into a new industry, you have to really know what you're doing and you have to deliver, because you're gonna make them feel bad about the whole thing if you screw it up.
Mm-hmm. Because like you said, the marketeers or maybe the advertisers, I would say, they are somewhat unfamiliar with this particular territory, you know, and perhaps for some of them, it's still new, right? So, and some of them perhaps joined you reluctantly. Some of them joined you because they thought like the other competitors are on the gaming space, so we should also be joining. What are some of the let's say, if you think about different kind of questions that they ask, like what are some of the questions that they ask you? Like, okay, I don't know, like it could be different questions from each different marketeers, right?
So I wouldn't say that they don't know at all about gaming, because it would be not fair. You cannot say that. So there are a lot of people who are really skilled and really knowledgeable. And also there are people who know that potential, know the field, like understand it, but also know that they do not understand it as much to be comfortable it in making a move into the space. Mm-hmm. And I really respect them, because it means that they really value the audiences, and they know that these audiences want quality. So they will be cautious about like making this happen in a good way. I would say that we a bit answer this fear in a way, because we bring a way for brands to enter into gaming mm-hmm. in a very, very safe way for them. So they don't have to know everything. We help them in a way, like what artwork, like what should be the message you want to convey. But also on the other hand, we give them a tool that's really similar to what they have done before. They can put it into Excel file, just close to Facebook ads, Google ads, and to influencer marketing, and compare it all. And this is what it changes. So we come to them and say that you get the ability to measure it as it's a digital media. You get the brand awareness, and you are in live streaming and gaming and gain the benefit of micro influencers, because you are working with streamers directly. And this all is happening without your need to even go into like close contact with those streamers. We handle it all.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit what we do is an answer to the question of many marketers. So they are like, I am pushed to go into gaming because the brand wants it, but I don't know how to do it in a safe way. And we don't have maybe even time or budget, because it's not sometimes not about knowledge, but sometimes about time, budget, resources, all those things. Because an influencer campaign or a tour esports tournament or any non-standard thing needs a lot of work. And sometimes mm-hmm. you need to just make it happen in one quick campaign. And in our case, you can come up to us, and in 2 days we can set up a campaign that will help you work with 500 streamers, 1,000 streamers,
mm-hmm.
and you can change it. You can make the budget bigger. It's elastic, scalable. So I wouldn't say that there are certain questions, because every case is different, especially if you want to do non-standard things. The question that industry was facing for a while now is how to do gaming, how to be present in gaming live streaming in an easy way.
Right, right. And what sort of ad, you know, are you displaying? It is about the brand for, I don't know, for television, let's say. I'm just making it up, right? So mm-hmm. it could be television ad, or I don't know, it could be music ad, or it could be anything, right? So Are there certain categories of ad that you display, or it could be anything?
So one thing, we do not display ads
Ah, okay.
because like you could say any form of promotion, of
Okay.
brand promotion is an advertisement, but we really refrain from even saying it's ads because it's sponsorship with a streamer. It manifests itself by an animation on the screen, but it's about making sure that the streamer chooses who they work with, because if you do advertisement in television, the TV is not like they just see if it like matches their guidelines, but they do not care what brands are in the television.
Yeah,
Or
that's
if you
right.
are a YouTuber, if you have pre-rolls or mid-rolls, you do not know what brands are there. In our case, the streamers explicitly say that they want to work with this brand and they know how it will look on their stream. They know that their viewers should know that this brand has chosen to support this small streamer instead of working with one of the biggest streamers and
Ah.
or even going to sponsoring. So what we did is because to gain a certain reach, it was very hard to work with streamers. So to get a certain reach as a brand, you needed to work with the biggest ones because you had to reach a certain amount of views, a certain amount of people. And because it was so hard to work with a streamer, you couldn't scale it and work with 100 streamers. You needed to work with 3 maximum. And what we did, we made this process so easy that you can work easily with 1,000 streamers instead of those top 3 or 4 ones. So we opened the whole market for the whole market of sponsorships to all the small streamers, and they really appreciate it. So they appreciate this brand is doing it and they bring in results. So in the terms of how it looks, it just looks, it's an animated banner on stream and a message with a link in chat. Of course, every view, every click is measured. In terms of who can be present in live streaming, we worked with Samsung, Netflix, worked with PlayStation. So brands with like different approaches. And I think every brand that wants to reach a young audience, Gen Z audience, can be present in live streaming. And how? It's up to your messaging, how you want to approach it, what is the value you give.
Interesting, like, you know, what you just said, because for people like who are not aware of what does the live stream represents as far as the ad is concerned, like I asked you a question like how the ad is going to be displayed, right? So you mentioned it's something different, right? So to animation part and also the link descriptions, perhaps, you know, you provide that right on the channel, on the chat itself. Now that's about the technical side of how, you know, you display the ad,
sponsorships,
the sponsorship, right? So now about the onboarding of the gamers itself or the streamers itself, how do you set a criteria there? Is there any criteria like you say, okay, these are the only people I'm going to take it? Maybe there are things that, you know, you don't like about certain gamers. Do you have those criteria?
So platform wise, there are some platforms who do some kind of automatization in influencer marketing. And their problem is that they want streamers with at least 100 concurrent viewers, streamers who are this big, or they select the streamers. And we are all about like enabling sponsorships to all streamers worldwide. So we have seen like hundreds, millions of streamers like having their passion, wanting to stream, wanting to earn, to go professional with it. And we are not the ones to judge who should be eligible to have a sponsorship. So our platform is open to every streamer. Everyone with a YouTube or Twitch account can register. And in terms of campaign, of course, sometimes brands do want to choose which streamers they work with, work with, the same way as streamers can choose what brands they work with. But usually the brands do not choose even the streamers themselves, but again, so if there is a brand that says, okay, we don't want to be seen on CSGO because we don't want to be associated with shooting people, and we do not want to be streamed in CSGO. What we do, if even if you are a CSGO streamer, you can join the campaign, but it will not be shown, you will not be paid if you play CSGO. And we know that you are playing CSGO, so just this brand will not be shown there. If you switch a game, if you go just chatting, if you try out a new game, you will work with the brand. And in terms of general things, of course, like we do not want streamers who are breaking the law, who are very, very vulgar. So anything that's like, that would be banned on any platform, of course, we don't want it, but it also is about their content. Like if they are streaming on a live streaming platform, if they do something bad, they will be banned there. So they cannot work with brands through us because they are not on a platform. So like generally every streamer can join, but of course, once you join, and once you work with brands, once you are in a professional sponsorship, you need to adhere to some standards.
Coming back to the company itself, right? So how difficult it is to raise capital for this sort of idea, right? It's not what I call, it's a new idea on its own. Obviously, it's a, you know, if you think about it, it's more like a advertising platform in a sense, right? So if you think about it, maybe for streamers, you can say you can segment. You can think about it in that perspective. In the past, we used to have, I don't know, for our website, we used to have those kind of, you know, advertising channel. So how difficult was it to get investment for your company?
I think 99.9% of companies can say it's hard to get capital for your company. And because it's a very, very long process. So every time we raise money, we underestimate how long it's going to take. And I think it's standard for every startup. From my perspective, the pre-seed round with Smog VC was not that hard, I think, because it was a local pre-seed round. So we went with the best fund possible, but it of course took us a couple of months to really get it signed up, go through negotiations, all those things. So it was quite hard on this side. The seed round we are currently closing, we'll be announcing soon, was raised via convertibles. So on one hand, it was really elastic for us because we could raise money and then go back into the process for 2 months and like have this money in the account. But on the other hand, there is never a closing date. So you are always, always constantly in the process. And to give numbers, we talked with, let's say, 100 VCs and got a total of 3 yeses. Maybe there will be a 4 yes. And I think it's quite hard, especially for gaming related, because we are live streaming, but also gaming related companies to raise money because everyone is interested in gaming, in live streaming, in esports. It's a hot name. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that they understand how the industry works. And you still need time to explain your approach to it. And sometimes people just don't want to go into a field that they don't feel comfortable with. And on the other hand, there are people who know the field, but there are not a lot of them. So it's normal if there are 10 VCs or 20 VCs in the world that specialize in gaming, esports, live streaming, it's not a lot. So it's a game of statistics. For me, the most important thing in this round was one thing that it's very different to pitch to VCs from Europe versus from States. So in Europe, we are very used to underestimate, underpromise, and over-deliver. So when we are asked about our, let's say, five-year vision or long-term vision, we see what we know is real. Like when we say it, we know we're going to do it. And like there is a 100% probability. Like, of course, there's never 100%, but we are very convinced we will do it. So when we say we will reach 500 million exit, it's because we are convinced we will do it. Whereas in United States, you are used to overpromise and underdeliver. So you are used to grandiose vision that will change the world, build the rocket to Mars and all those things. And most startups don't deliver those visions, but they are used to promise them. So also the investors are very used to like divide this vision by 3, 5, or even 10. And it's still a decent, if you promise you're going to be a 50 billion company, if you divide it by 10, it's still a decent investment. It's still 500. So we learned on one hand to really make our vision big, but also to believe in it. And on the other hand, we learned to think about this grandiose vision, because one thing really struck me at some point. If you say you're going to build a $1 billion company, and if you say you're going to build $100 million company, the road to 1 billion goes through 100 million, but it's not the same road that would just take you to 100 million. So if you have a mindset for a billion, it's going to be a different road. You're going to make different choices when you have a mindset for 100 million. And this round really changed it, because like it's hundreds of hours of conversations with people who done a lot of investment, were analyzing the markets, the company, all those things. So it's always valuable because it gives a kind of a ping pong feedback of what we should think about. And for me, specifically, because I cannot talk about everyone in the company, it was an eye-opening process in terms of changing my mindset from, okay, we are doing a startup, let's see what happens, to, okay, we know we can do it, let's have the vision for a unicorn and let's do it. So from just like the acceleration, like the speed with the momentum we gained in the beginning, now it's time for us to really see how big it is, can become. So get a step to the left or to the right and just see what has been happening and how far we can go. So in terms of maybe it's not about like fundraising in itself, because fundraising is a game of statistics, game of how well you can talk with people, how well you learn about what's important in your business, so what how to explain it to people. But in terms of running the business itself, this was interesting for me. I don't know if this answers the question. What is it hard? It is hard raising money. It is hard. It's time consuming, and it's worth it. And worth it in terms you're gonna get money eventually, and worth it in terms of how it exercises your brain.
Interesting. I mean, I appreciate the fact that you are quite open about how the process was for you, and how did you find it, you know, as far as the challenge is concerned. That's one side of the puzzle, right? So if you think about fundraising, this is only a start. You know, maybe if you think about the, you know, in a broader sense of the company, you know, creating vision, creating a solution is one part. Then there is a part where you gather investments, right? Which is your operational model, you know, for you to sustain, right? And then there is another side, which is about people, right? So you're being the relationship with the people. Maybe you have more developers now. Maybe your team is getting bigger. How are you keeping up with those elements?
So, our team was 6, counting 4 co-founders in March last year. March this year, we are 28, I would say.
Woo! That's a
So,
lot of number.
yeah,
Oh.
and we are just starting to hire. So right now we are starting our hiring craze, I would say. And it's been difficult. Like when there are 6 people, 10 people, 15 even people in the company, you just really keep up with everyone, with what's happening in every field. You are out there, you talk with those people. And when there's more, it's just really, really hard to keep those direct relations. And also, it's not needed. They have their job to do, they have their team to talk with, to manage all those things. So for me, for sure, right now, what we face is making sure that the culture and the closeness and the spirit we had when we were 15 people and when we are 28 right now, because the spirit is also great. How do we keep it up if we scale even more? So what processes should we put in place? What should we care about? How should we name those values? How we will encourage those values? And it's a lot of work that is one of the most important parts of the startup. So everywhere you go, you're gonna read about that the team in startup makes or breaks it. The culture in your startup makes or breaks it. And we are very focused on it. Of course, this also means some, let's say, tedious normal task like how to make onboarding, especially in a remote setup, because we are a fully remote company, really work because it's harder. How we can run training, if we can train juniors and in this remote setup, because it's way harder to train juniors this way. And junior people who have a very great potential just need to learn some skills are amazing people. I was a junior person 2 years ago. There are many questions, and part of answering those questions is just getting great people on board who know how to do it or just have an intuition how to do it. So right now, I think our, let's say, back office HR team really, really cares and knows what they are doing. So I think it's very hard to keep it up on your own. If you're a lone CEO of a startup who thinks they can run it all themselves and they can make all those things happen, manage all those things themselves, you will be out of business soon, because the main thing you have to learn is to hire great people and then give up the things you are doing to them, handle it to them, make sh like know that this is their responsibility and give them the trust that they will do it the best. And this is the only way you can grow. So for me, it was a lesson to change my mindset into that, into from being a doer of everything into being the empowerer, I would say. But I think it's very important. And in the moment that you not only worry about making the product, but making the team, in the end, the team is the most important part.
And knowing that now that you've faced that challenge of hiring people, hiring the right people, now if you compare that to raising investment, where do you find more comfortable now knowing both these sides have their own fair share of challenge? Where do you find, okay, maybe this part I would take it every single day. And maybe people side it's interesting, but maybe I don't want to take that, like, or vice versa. Like, which one do you prefer?
Me personally, I would prefer to take maybe not like, okay, so I think the hiring and people thing, this is just the beginning for me. Like we are right now seeing the tip of an iceberg of things we need to care about and how big it's gonna grow. So this is just the beginning. And I personally am not the best person doing that. I really care about people. I am the one running our all hands meetings. But I'm just not the best person at operations. I'm the talking and grand vision and strategy person. So this really fits into raising money. When you are raising money, you need to talk to people, explain your vision and do it. This is what I can do personally. But what's easier to grow your culture or to raise money? I think you have to scale, care about people and grow your culture to be a successful startups. And there are more startups that have raised money than there are startups who had success, who were successful. So I think it's harder to maintain the people side.
You know, if you look at the people around you, right? So you've seen the rise of, like, let's say you earlier you said like you were a 6-people team and now you're 25 and beyond, and you're still hiring some more, I believe, in the future, near the future. So the team is growing, right? So you also said, like, you know, the processes needs to be relooked at, right? The same process that worked when you were 5 to 6 people, perhaps it's not going to work. And how did you validate that? Like, okay, these are the processes, perhaps it's going to work. Like, how did you validate that part? Or your co-founders support you into identifying, okay, maybe these are the processes that perhaps would support you?
Yeah, I was not the one handling those processes. And I think we will never say that we have found the golden rule. I think we are right now exploring them through trial and error. Basically, every new person that is onboarding in a bit different way. And we ask them for feedback and we change it for the next person onboarding. So I'm really sorry to the people who are onboarding for the past year. It wasn't the perfect experience, but I'm happy you are with us. And you will never know. You have to constantly change and improve, and the process will change as we grow, because it was very easy for a new person on any in any department to a year ago go through all the documents in the company and learn all the things about the company. And right now, after a year, there is just so much more to learn. You cannot learn it all when you're onboarding for a, let's say, IT department. You have to focus on learning the IT part, because it also grew heavily through the year. So it's trial and error. It's asking people what they think. It's less about the process and more about the person. I was not the one handling it. It was Maciej and the whole, let's say, HR department, Julia, Małgorzata right now. So I would say that in the end, it's all about people. If you doing all those things you do related to HR, you think about those people as person, not just resources, human resources, it's gonna be okay. If you, we also have this culture of just owning our own mistakes. If you say that it's not a fixed thing, we know that this is not perfect. You can give feedback. We want your feedback. We want to improve it together. It's all right. It shows that you care about the person and you are not a god that knows everything. And in the end, this no ego approach is very important.
And when you're, let's say I asked this question yesterday and I'm going to repeat this today as well. So I asked the other founder that, you know, if I call one of your employee and ask, like, you know, about Victoria, and you know, say what kind of leader is Victoria, then what would she say or he say about you?
Yeah, I thought you were gonna ask how is it to work with me, because I would say chaotic and chaotic, but I am working on it. I think people would say that I'm very enthusiastic. I really am highly motivated, and like I really believe into what we are building, and I really try to push it into people. Like push it, it's a wrong word, but I show it. So some people might say that I am enthusiastic and motivating, and some might say that I am irritating with my positiveness, and it's okay. Like I don't know if no somebody would say it, but you can see it this way normally. And yeah, I personally I do not have like direct reports. I am like a free electron or a free neutron in the company that just goes around, and I take on different projects. I help with like in a spot that I need it, I'm there. Usually like concerning products or some marketing things. So I would say I'm a hands-off leader. I'm not hands-in any thing. I want people to take responsibility of what they are doing. I want them to feel appreciated. And I hope they would say these things about me. You can ask them.
And how often are you challenged, right? So I'm sure there are going to be some interactions where it's going to be uncomfortable for a leader to accept that, somebody, your employee is going to challenge you on certain aspect of how things should be done. Some people don't take it, some people have their way of working, and some people say, yeah, I like the fact that you actually reached out to me. And really ask the question. So in that perspective, like, how do you think about your employee as far as they challenging you, and how do you deal with those things?
Okay, I never see anything a person suggests on a project. Like they say, I don't agree with this. This should be done this way, or I don't like it. This is not challenging me. This is challenging a thing. So we have this really, and this is for me one of the most important things about our culture, values we have that it's always about the thing. It's not the feedback is not ever personal. Like, okay, it would be personal if somebody said you are stupid, but nobody says that. People say, I don't like this idea. I think it's better to do it this way. And I like it. I want people to say what they think because this is the only way we can get to the best ideas. And I also like it. And I'm kind of proud that I don't feel like it like challenging me because when I was younger, so a couple of years ago, let's say,
You always refer to a couple of years ago. I was young and I'm now old.
So I would take every feedback to anything I did very personally. I would see it as challenging me. I wanted to be the smartest person in the room. And this was because I was not feeling confident with myself. And now, when I'm okay with myself, I don't see any feedback as challenging me. And I also don't want any person who sees my feedback to think that this is challenging them. Because it's always in the end about making the best thing we can do right now. And they can also disagree with my feedback. And it took some time for me to learn. And I think this is the most valuable thing you can learn. So to not take those things personally. And it's not that easy because sometimes I propose a thing that I really, really like. I put my whole heart into it. And somebody says, no, we should do it differently. Of course, it's not easy, but in the end, it's good to take a deep breath and discuss. For example, the person I disagree with the most with is my co-founder Shimon. We sometimes clash. We discuss very abruptly, like how we should do different things. But in the end, we come to a conclusion. Either one of us says, "Okay, do it your way. If you are feeling convinced this is the best way, let's do it." Or in other ways, in other things, we come to a conclusion that we have a new idea that's better than the ones both of us proposed. And I see those arguments as arguments about the thing. And we can laugh about arguing a lot. And I can laugh about it right now because it doesn't concern me. It doesn't challenge me in a way. It challenges the thing, even if it gets heated.
Interesting way to look at it, because I come from a very consulting background, right? So I have to work with leadership, which like who runs a bigger organization. And there, you know, when you challenge those leadership about their ability to decide on a certain things, it's almost like unheard of, right? So they don't hear those feedback from their subordinates. So all of a sudden, this guy comes up and say, hey, this is not the correct way to do. So it's a little bit difficult for them to digest that, because they're so used to just providing instructions, right? So it's a different culture, right? So in the startup, perhaps it's easier, you know, to really have that. I mean, you can build your own environment, right? The way you want to be, or the way you think people will like it, right? And in the corporate culture, perhaps it's different, you know, because they are so used to doing it in that way in many years. So I guess, you know, that's something. It's very,
yeah.
Very.
I mean, that's why startups are innovative and corporations usually are not.
Yeah. I mean, and startups are more agile in that perspective, because it's a small team. You are able to decide things faster. If you have problems, you can fix it within that team. There's no lot of bureaucracy there. Even though as the team grows, you will start to feel that, you know, you might start to feel that this is something coming up, this is boiling up. But, you know, I would like to maybe think that, you know, being a startup, I think it's still a great way to sort of, you know, do your operations, you know, so.
Yeah, and this is what the culture problem is, like the culture challenge, even not the problem. So how do you maintain this culture to not turn into like a very stiff corporation in a year? Because we cannot turn into a corporation in a year. We have to be still agile. We have to be still innovative. We have to have feedback from different departments. What I love the most about my company is that everyone can propose an improvement for any idea, any department, and all the communication is open. So we work on ClickUp. It's an, like you would call it, a Trello. Slack and Asana had a baby that was that had superpowers, and you can go into each department and read all of the discussions, all of the tasks, and so you have the access to all the information in the company. And you know, people who work, for example, as community experts with streamers, can go into technology and propose a whole new thing, a whole new product. And it's very welcomed if they do it. They are tasked with researching those things. And all of this is done collectively, because people know that their feedback to anything we do in the company is valued, because they are part of the company. They are not a part of a department. They are part of the company as a whole.
It's easy to sort of, you know, perhaps it's much easier to just to start a company than to run it, because you start, you know, you just start because you have an idea, you just start, and you there's not much in there itself, but
it's
to
just,
run,
you can just push it.
Yeah, just push it, that's it, right? But at the end of the day, when you want to run it, you know, like a business, then there's a lot of things you need to think about, right? So yeah, how do you engage your people? How do you make sure that there is a continuous flow of cash, right? Because
yeah, so you can say that it's like having a baby. It's easy to conceive a baby and even give birth to it, but raising it to a decent human being, it's way more hard.
Yeah, it's a lot of challenge, and I'm quite curious about your learnings, right? So you like you said, a couple of years ago, you were still young, but you know, the job has made you wiser, smarter, and more mature, I believe. And maybe you are referring to that being older. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, but also I just I have like a very clear sense in self of saying what's in the past and what is now, even though I am very like young. I'm 23, so like me saying when I was younger is a form of a joke, but I always say like I feel like I'm constantly learning, and I still am not on a level that you might call a super exceptional. Like I still have room to grow. And when I say when I was younger, is because I feel it like it's past me. It's something I did in the past. And even if it was a year ago and 6 months ago, I just don't want to say that this is a part of me. Like I have done it in the past, but right now it's different because sometimes I just even feel ashamed of how stubborn I was or ha how up like in my mind, like with my nose high up and all those things. So I always say in the past because it's very important for me to say that I am constantly mindful of not being like that anymore.
Because every year or every month you spend from the previous month, you are much wiser, right? So you learn new things from your colleagues, from the people that are around you. You learn new things, and maybe the experience itself, right? Raising fund, it's not an easy thing to do, because a lot of people struggle there. Maybe you have that skill, in you that you're able to do that more comfortably than maybe working with people or running the operations, right? So yeah, I mean, those are things that you will learn eventually over time, right? So it's not you don't have to learn everything today, so
Yeah, and there is no possibility for me to know everything today or even after a year running the startup. And it's also all right because in the end, that's what startup is all about. You are doing a thing that haven't been done before. You cannot know how it's going to be done. You cannot know all the challenges because even if some things are repeating in most startups, it's always a bit different case. So everyone is kind of new in this. And everyone has previous experiences that they can benefit.
Right. Victoria, it was definitely wonderful, wonderful talking to you. I would like to maybe continue talking to you, but then I believe like you have some more things to do. But yeah, it was a wonderful session. I get to learn a lot about you, your company, and what you are into. I understand the space now you are into, the challenges that perhaps you are going into. I totally appreciated your thoughtful answer or the response to the question that I asked. I really appreciated that, and also your openness about your leadership style and also how you think about the company and how you see the future. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the wonderful talk and thoughtful questions.
Yeah. Thank you, and you take care.